Hello, Dr. Stacy Ellis here, clinical psychologist. You are partaking in Liberation Healing Early Childhood, the 2-hour introduction. You are on part 2 of 4, programming. Here we go. So, let me get my PowerPoint going here. So when you think of programming, what comes up? Computers? Team Jacob from the Twilight series? That is not the programming I speak of. Us as human beings have been programmed. That is the truth. Imprinting is the interaction between instinct and learning. Instinct and learning. In psychology, imprinting is a kind of phase-sensitive learning, or we call it like the critical period, where we are most impressionable to this imprinting. And it's rapid, and it's apparently independent of behaviors, consequences of behaviors. Doesn't matter. Okay? It only takes one time on a raw nerve for a belief to be imprinted. Kind of scary if you think about it. So, the biological window for this critical period is up to around age 5. So 0 to 5. There was a really interesting study done with children between the ages of 2 and 6. And what they noticed is they spent more time at a higher EEG activity level, a theta level of 4 to 6 hertz, which is the same state the hypnotherapists put their patients into. Now, if you think about this, when you're being hypnotized, you're very impressionable. So what they're finding is children between the ages of 2 and 6 are as impressionable as someone under hypnosis. What was going on in your life between the ages of 2 and 6? So what happens is parents are acting as genetic engineers for their children. That can be a positive thing or that can be a scary thing. There's even a concept called genomic imprinting, where before conception, parents are imprinting on their child. And just for note's sake, when I say imprinting or programming, those two words are interchangeable during this section. Okay, so what is imprinting? What is programming? What is the definition? Fundamentally, it is behaviors, beliefs, and attitudes we observe in our parents that become hardwired into the synaptic pathways in our subconscious. Let me say that again. It's behaviors, beliefs, and attitudes that we observe, that we experience from our parents that become hardwired in our neural pathways in the subconscious. Our ability to learn is so advanced that we can acquire perceptions indirectly. This is what I mean. If your parent says something directly to you, "You're not enough, Stacy." Boom, imprint. If my mother says it directly to my sibling, "Eric, you're not enough." Boom, imprinting. If my mother insinuates or gives me the impression that I'm not enough, boom, imprint. If my mom insinuates that my brother Eric isn't enough, and that's the impression I get, guess what? Boom. Imprint. If my mom says it about herself, "Oh, I'm not enough." Guess what? Boom. Imprint. If she insinuates that she feels like she's not enough, that too is an imprint. Wow. So the role our primary caregivers play in our lives between the ages of 2 and 6 and potentially before conception till 6, before the logical mind starts developing, is paramount to what we believe about the world, our attitudes about ourselves in the world, and how we're going to behave in our lives in the world. These become hardwired in our nervous system, and I'll talk more about triggers, but can become more and more ingrained through our life experiences. So our truth becomes our programming. What potential misperceptions have you learned about yourself and the world from the imprinting from your caregivers? And like I said before, our subconscious mind is not monitored. It'll be habitually engage in inappropriate and limiting behaviors. And essentially, our beliefs control our biology. Our beliefs control our biology. So, in the vein of self-esteem, this is one of the sections I cover in the 4-day intensive, which I'll talk about in section part 4. I want you to contemplate some of these questions and what imprinting, what beliefs about yourself in the world might be in your nervous system. Did your mom or dad or primary caregiver tell you or others or give you the impression that you weren't good enough? Did your primary caregiver love you? How did he or she love you, and was it in a way that worked for you? Did your primary caregivers tell you that you were good and you could do good things? How did you know this? Was your primary caregivers mad a lot? Did they cry a lot? Did they yell a lot? What did this teach you? What did you learn to believe about this? Did you always have to do better? Did you have to be as good as your brothers, sisters, best friend? Did your primary caregivers hold you and listen to you when you were hurt or sad or mad? What did your primary caregiver like about you? What did they tell you they liked about you, if anything? Were they nice to you? Were they nice to themselves? Were they mean to you? Did they blame you? Did they tell you made a lot of mistakes? Did you get punished a lot? Were your mommy or daddy mean to you, your brothers, your sisters, to other people? How did they treat other people in the community? All of these concepts, all of these aspects of self-esteem have been imprinted on you to some degree, whether positive or negative. And this is a tiny snapshot of what we cover in the 4-day intensive. Tiny snapshot. So here's the thing. A lot of us default to my parents meant well, or they did the best they could. We don't want to punish or come down on our parents. Of course not. It's not an or. It's not they love me or they don't. It can be they love me and they made some mistakes. They love me and they imprinted some things that didn't work for me. They love me and I didn't get everything I needed. It's an and. So typically, and I mean this in general, parents want to raise a good child, right? A good child that is happy in their life. They apply, though, their value to what is good. Whatever they've been taught about what is good, whatever their parents taught them about what is good. So you've got this transgenerational imprinting about what raising a good child is. And it's all dependent on what good means to them. Good can mean obedient and quiet. So you're raised to be obedient and quiet. But what if your personality and your character is loud and expressive? What does it do to that child? It sends the message that they're not okay, that they should be somebody else, that they're defective in some way. Or, for instance, to be male means you gotta suck it up, you gotta be strong, so you get a beat down. Your father teaches you how to be a man. But maybe you're sensitive. Maybe you're intuitive. Maybe that ideal of what it means to be a strong man, that doesn't fit for you. And so you doubt yourself and you question yourself and you make yourself bad and wrong and you overcompensate. See where the problem is here? Some level of cookie cutter parenting, even well-intentioned parents, imprint things that are not appropriate for that unique being. My parents imprinted me with some wonderful values, some wonderful ideas about myself and the world. Some of them were appropriate for me and some of them were not, because of my own uniqueness. I wasn't seen as the individual that I was. One of the things I was imprinted with, whether it was the intention of my parents or not, doesn't matter. I learned that my emotions were not acceptable other than happy. Happy was acceptable. But if I was sad, if I was hurt, if I was angry, I had to go sit in my closet and cry and come back out all sunshiny. Because I had the impression that my mom needed me to be strong and happy and responsible because I was the oldest child and I had all these younger siblings with issues and she needed me to have it together. Now, whether she meant to send that message or not, that's the message I got. And so I started performing. I started acting like I was okay when I really wasn't. And the few times that I would actually express my emotions, I got shut down. My mom would get overwhelmed, or my dad would say, Marty, your daughter, I don't know what to do with her. And so it was like he disowned me. He didn't know how to deal with emotions. And so I learned to numb out and disconnect from my emotions, dissociate, and perform. And become Miss Sunshine, which ironically was my nickname growing up. So there's an example of course, being responsible is a great thing. Being happy and sunshiny is a great thing. But it's an example of where that imprinting between good and what's right for that individual don't necessarily converge. Okay, so I want to ask you this. How many of you out there feel like you came from a functional family unit? Typically half the room when I'm doing this workshop raises their hand. So I looked at the research and I pulled out about 10 characteristics at the top of the list. So you compare what you think is a functional family to this. There is mutual respect The parents respect each other. They respect the children. Mutual respect. Emotional safety. It's safe to express your emotions. Not the just the good ones, but the bad ones as well. There's resilience. When there's a trauma or a death or a challenge or a move or just life stressors, the family works together, bands together, and they are flexible and malleable and get through it. There's privacy. You know, parents snooping in your diary or looking in your phone. There's privacy for the parents, the kids. There's boundaries around that. Accountability. Everybody has their responsibilities in the home. Everybody's accountable for their part. There's apologizing. When someone's wrong, they apologize. And I don't mean the rote, I'm sorry, which doesn't mean much, but a specific, genuine ownership of where someone was wrong or could have done better. Emotional expression. It's okay to let your feelings out. Your parents are expressive. You're allowed to be expressive. With positive emotions, negative emotions, they're all emotions. And they help, they've helped you manage your emotions. Healthy outlets. But all emotion is acceptable. There's room for growth. Growth is promoted in this family. There's minimal sarcasm or teasing. That jabbing, poking at each other. But there's a camaraderie. There's a courtesy. There's collaboration. Working together on planning family trips. Working together on making dinner. Working together on what are we going to do with this evening. And there's clear boundaries. What's acceptable and what's not is clearly stated. And there's clear consequences attached to those. That's just 10. Typically, I'll ask this question again. Now, how many people feel like they came from a functional family? And about 2 people in the room will raise their hand, and that's about accurate. Most of us have a certain degree of dysfunctionality in our family dynamics growing up. So what's the impact of imprinting? What is these neural pathway imprints do to our psyche, do to who we become? Well, they become our beliefs. And then we mostly learn what's not natural, what isn't us. We end up surviving instead of truly living. A lot of us employ self-soothing strategies. Some of them, most of them, are not healthy. We numb out, drinking, overworking, one relationship after another, anything not to feel. We employ defense mechanisms. Some of us are in denial, just flat out denial, that we are even programmed to begin with. Some of us minimize, oh, no, it's not that big a deal. Yeah, it'll be fine. Some of us caretake. We're just so busy taking care of everybody else outside of ourselves. Some of us catastrophize. We blow it up. We make it bigger than it is. It becomes dramatic. There's always drama, right? Some of us are escaping. Some of us are in freeze mode, avoiding. Some of us are constantly in reaction, projecting, blaming other people. And all this because we can't authentically be ourselves, and we don't even know why. And some of us are dissociating. If you don't have memories before the age of 8, I hate to say it, but that's fairly common for people that have dysfunctional families. Children are extremely adaptable. So dissociate from the mind, from the memories, then you don't have anything to deal with. if it's not there. Dissociating from the emotional body. Feeling numb, disconnected, confused about what you're feeling. You might not be feeling anything at all. Dissociating from the body, just living from the neck up, not paying attention to what's happening in the body. Some of us feel depersonalization, like we just feel like we're floating or swimming through water, but we're not really here. And some of us are just flat out stuck, like we got trapped in one moment of time and we're just going through the motions. This is most of us. When a living organism is denied the components necessary for it to thrive in its natural environment, it becomes developmentally immature. It needs the necessary components to thrive. If you are not thriving as a child, then you are likely developmentally immature. Most of us are walking around like big kids. We don't even know that we are. And not in a healthy way, in a really wounded way. So I want to share with you another aspect of imprinting that has to do with attachment. Anthony DeMello's work, love his work. When we have beliefs about what we need or want to be happy, or we attach to a certain desire or dream, whether that be a person, whether that be a career, whether that be obtaining something, whether it be material or just status, we attach to that. We now attach our beliefs to that. I'll give you an example. I hear people say to me all the time, I want to be that person. I want to be special to them. I just want to be special to them. Okay. So they are going to have their beliefs and their imprinting about what special is. And if you don't meet all the criteria, that needs to be met for them to consider you special, they're not going to treat you special. So now you've given all your power over to this individual so that you can meet their criteria, their programming of what special is. You become a slave to it. One day, boop, 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 bing, you meet the criteria. They treat you really special. Yay! The next day, even if you do one thing that doesn't meet the criteria of special, you don't get treated special. See how that works? The fact of the matter is, you are special all on your own. You are a unique expression of the whole. And if you don't live out your dharma, your purpose on this planet, we will miss out on it because it is uniquely the creativity and the expression of what you have to offer. That makes you freaking special. Not what somebody else thinks. So every time we attach ourselves to an outcome, we attach ourselves to a person, just a person in general, when we decide we need them to be happy, that particular person, that's codependency. That's not happiness. Happiness is the positive outcome of living fully, completely expressed in any given moment as the best version of ourselves? And can we have that most of the time? Yes. You can spend your whole life trying to get people in situations to conform to your computer demands for happiness, and you will be miserable because they won't need it most of the time. What ends up happening is every time you attach to that and you don't meet the criteria for your programming is threatened, your beliefs are threatened, you become fearful, anxious, sad, angry, etc. So when people come to me and they say, I'm feeling depressed, I'm feeling anxious, of course you are. Of course you are. Part three, we're going to dive deeper into the science, deeper understanding of emotions, trauma, stress, and triggers. We're going to get present day.